Okay, welcome to Prime Time. It is 4 p.m., so we're going to go ahead and get started. Please drop your questions in the Office Hours text channel if you have questions, and I'll get to them as soon as I can. There are no questions waiting, so whilst waiting for that, I do want to promote the newly created from myself Myths page. They're a little bit, like, agitated by just myths in the community. It's kind of natural right now due to the situations at play, but hey, that's a Tico link. I want, like, actual link. Copied it from my Twitter, that's why it's a Tico link. Give me a second. There we go. Myths page. For those of you dropping in, if you have any questions, drop them into the Office Hours text channel. It's two slots above this one in the channel list. I'll just hang out and we'll wait for any questions that may, if at all. Please ask questions. Okay, so we have a question from Drace, which is, why are you so amazing? The answer to that one is, that is an opinion, which you are welcome to have. There is no way to justify an opinion. It's your opinion. For those new folks dropping in, drop questions in Office Hours and we'll get to them as soon as we can. Otherwise, just sit back, relax, and listen to the uncomfortable silence that exists in this room when there are no questions. For those dropping in, drop questions in Office Hours, the text channel that's two slots above this one that you clicked, and we'll get to them as soon as we can. There are still no questions. So the uncomfortable silence will be increased to level 11. We have a good question from Snake Venus, who asks, what is this? So this is the Office Hours, or AMA, for Primetime, which is myself. I'm in charge of sort of many things, but most importantly, documentation and tutorials here at Neos. So if you have questions on those lines, let me know. If you have questions just for the Neos team generally, ask them. I'll be able to sort of either answer them or redirect you to the appropriate place. Whatever you want to ask, you can go ahead and ask. Just drop it in the Office Hours channel. Russia has a good question. Says, are there any guidelines for formatting Neos Wiki pages? The answer is yes. On the sidebar of the Neos Wiki, there is a button called Contributing to the Wiki, which leads to a page which talks about the formatting and guidance for how to contribute to the wiki. Take a look at that. We have some questions. So from Drace, we say, how are you doing yourself on this fine day? I'm good. I saw a bird. No, it was yesterday, but I guess I could talk about it. Yeah, I've got a balcony here in my apartment. And a bird landed on the chair outside here and looked at me grumpily and then ruffled his feathers and flew away. That was cool. So SLS asks, where does the money from Patreon go to? So the money from Patreon goes into an account, and then that account is used to pay for various things. Right now, that would be the cloud bill that we have. So we have cloud services. Those do require money. And any other sort of technical stuff like that. So presume we'd have to renew our domain periodically. So neos.com is such a needs renewing that I'll get paid for. Other than that, I don't actually know. I'd love for us to get to pie chart. A pie chart would be great. You know, it'd be like, I'm making up these percentages. These are not the correct percentages. I'm just making them up for conversation. Let's say 10% goes to service costs. 2% goes to, I don't know, administrative costs. Like, whatever, domain renewal. I don't know. Just like stuff like that. And it'll be like, 2/3 goes to salaries or whatever, and it'll be like 1% goes to cheese. You know, like a pie chart that shows exactly where the money was going would be like amazing. You'd be able to apply that pie chart to your individual contribution. Let's say, for example, you contributed $100 a month, then you'd be able to do that quite easily. You'd be able to be like, 1%, that's $1, goes towards Prime's cheese collection. You'd be able to be like, yep, $1 of my money goes to Prime's cheese collection, and it'd be beautiful. So hopefully maybe that. Would probably sort of extrapolate those out over a year as well, which sometimes isn't done. Like sometimes you'll see pie charts, which are just like the month, but that means what you get is like spikes and randomness. Whereas if you take those yearly expenses, break them down monthly, then you can get like a pie chart that's a lot more stable. So Duff has a question. For people who might want to start making things utilizing resources outside of Neos to contribute to it, has anybody thought of developing a workflow tutorials to help generate assets or encourage user-created content inside of Neos, i.e. Blender as a substance to importing the game. Not that I'm aware of. That's certainly like an avenue that people can certainly go into. I know that we've got a couple of sort of pin resources around for things like what Substance Painter workflow to use, what materials, what textures to use. We've also got wiki pages starting to appear, like the humanoid rig requirements I completely rewrote because it was driving me mad. We constantly get queries about that. They're like, my hip bone is called orangutan and Neos isn't recognizing it as an avatar. Like, this should be fixed. I'm like, no, it shouldn't. Don't name your hip bone orangutan. name it hip or hips, lowercase, or hip, lowercase, fine. It'll pick it up. If it's a hip bone, it should be named hips. But yeah, certainly like modeling and stuff like that. We often get feedback on our PBS like metallic maps that people find them confusing, which is confusing to me because like it's the standard Unity material map. So I don't really know what's going on there. Maybe it's an Unreal thing. Who knows? But as always, just make tutorials. Make them. Share them. People will watch them. If I was confident in my 3D modeling ability enough to make a functional avatar, we're talking just like a blob person, you know, like tubes for legs, etc. I would do the entire process. I'd be like, all right, day one, week one, open Blender, make the tube man, export to FBX, import, put the head where the head is, the hand where the hand is. Look, I'm using them just to sort of show it isn't hard. Like the hard parts should just be in the creativity. It shouldn't be in the technicalities. It should always be the same. Yeah, the skin modifier, yep, that would be, you know, perfect. There's lots of variation there, like the one in the bottom right, that's sort of reminiscent of sort of Incredibles or Minion styling. You make like an armature, and then you do the skin modifier on it. You do the armature like just lines. When I say armature, I don't mean blended armature, I mean like how you do an armature if you're like sculpting like IRL. You take wire, sometimes metal coat hangers, you bend it into the shape of the body, then you throw clay on it. That's exactly what the skin modifier does. You make the bent coat hanger, and then you throw the skin modifier on it, and you get clay. Duff asks, have you seen other user workflows utilizing resources outside of Blender Substance? If so, what would the alternative programs be? People do still use the other 3D modelers, Maya, and then like other more obscure ones. Maya and Blender are usually the two that people use these days. I've also seen a lot of people that use ZBrush for sculpting. That's totally fine too. ZBrush, I don't know. American UK pronunciations. Fusion comes up as well. I forgot, like when it comes to hard surface modeling, some people use like Fusion, stuff like that. SketchUp, that one for like architectural modeling. There's one particular user who was using the hammer editor to make their map for MMC. That was fun as well. But yeah, it's basically like the assets there are very similar to the ones that you would use for any game, really. I wouldn't like discourage or discount is probably a better wording there, the use of anything like Photoshop, GIMP, Paint.net, anything like that. You just sometimes like a good example here being like you download an avatar base and it has brown eyes and you want blue eyes. Photoshop or whatever can fix that for you. There's no need to open Blender. There's no need to open Substance Painter. There's no real need to even understand how the avatar works, right? You just open up the texture file and you're like, there are the eyes. I'll make them blue. And then you make them blue. I'm sort of interested, but not really, because the Windows UI is unfortunately, it wasn't good the last time I looked at it. It might be good now. There's this program called Dust, Dust 3D, which is a completely different way of modeling than you'll have seen. It's like hard to explain, but you have to get a side and front photo of the same object, and then you can kind of just like model it. Oh, that's going to be on the recording there. I just started a YouTube video. If you hear piano music on the recording of this, just ignore it. But yeah, if you look at this video here, they model a dog. And it isn't in any way that you would imagine that you would model a dog. Like, they never edit vertices at all. It might look like they do, but they never do. For maps and worlds like that, I have a license to World Machine. I haven't used it. World Machine usually makes, like, worlds which are too big for Neos. There is another one that generates terrain. You just do that usually with like Blender and Photoshop as well. You just make terrain. It's easy. It's just like a grayscale height map. Maps and worlds, just sometimes like paper will actually help there. You just throw stuff around. I did see a video yesterday of the PS5 game or PlayStation game called Dreams, where you can, it's very much sort of like more simplified than Neos, of course, but very much more user-friendly, where you can just sort of throw around stuff and people are like making art there or making scenes there that allow them to just like explore what they're doing. I know a lot of people use that for sort of sharing ideas, and then they'll go ahead and build it once they know what the ideas look like. Moving on to other questions there. SLS asks, what happens to Keynes' office hours? I don't know. I've asked them a few times. I moved their office hours to like temporarily suspended along with Chroma's. I would presume you would have to ask them if you want more information about that. Grusha asks, is there anything you've been wanting to cover in a tutorial but haven't got around to or would like to see more tutorials on? I have a huge list I just haven't got around to, so I'll just skip that one with everything jazz hands. I would like to see more tutorials on basically anything. Sometimes people are like, oh, I won't make tutorials because Prime makes them. You go ahead and make them. Go ahead and make them. Like, Basement Nerd's Logic tutorial isn't, like, my style. It's made completely differently. I myself wouldn't find it effective to learn logics, but some people do, and they find it helpful, and that's great. And that really just highlights that everyone learns differently and has a different approach to both learning and teaching. So go for it. Like, make tutorials. If there were, like, I don't know, 50 tutorials for learning logics out there, then there is a greater chance that one would fit a particular user. Additionally, there is this abbreviation called FAST, or FASTER, if you want to be more modern in the sort of lingo for it, which is about learning things. There's a blog article about it, learning, and I think FASTER. And it just has an abbreviation. And I think the T is like teach. Yeah, the T is teach. So there's a way of like, there's also like a pyramid of learning. I never remember what it's called. Yeah, here it is. I don't know if this is like the exact one, but it promotes the different types of learning, and it shows here that like lectures, audiovisual stuff is 20% retained, and then doing it, which is the sort of lower half of that pyramid, is 30, 50%, 75%, and then teaching others right at the bottom, 90%. I was talking to Fruks a while ago, and there is a study that was portrayed, and I think it was a European country. He recommended a book about it, but I've forgotten the name of the book, where they created a new type of school. And in this type of school, there was no real structure to it. People were just like free to learn whatever. And I didn't understand it. I was like, what do you mean? What happened was they mixed the age groups of the students, just sort of freeform, really. And they taught each other mostly. So there might be like in this school, like a reading room or a reading corner of a room. And there might be an older student there reading a more complex book, and it'll be a cool story. And so a younger student would go over there and sit down and be like, sounds cool, read me the story. And then they would read the story to them, and then maybe they might go, oh, I want to know what happens next. Can you teach me how to read a book at this level? And then boom, you've got an older student learning to read by teaching a younger student how to read, who's learning how to read. And then that just happened everywhere. You know, maybe the kid likes dinosaurs, so he goes over to like a freeform library and goes, cool, pulls a book on dinosaurs, can't read it, but can look at the pictures, looks at the pictures, shows the pictures to his classmates, and they're like, cool, we would like to learn how to read this dinosaur book. Over to an older student, all sorts of stuff like that. That's probably the name. Angie says it's a Sudbury school, probably. I need to read the book to understand more about how that works, because I've got sort of questions about sort of base skills that I don't think would be taught effectively there. Like, let's say a kid goes into that environment and they want to make a game. Cool. Like, they'll need to learn some maths there, but I believe there's probably a path through that school where they don't learn more traditionalized stuff. But part of the argument behind that type of schooling is, do they need to? And that goes against the sort of whole, like, up in arms, stand on your soapbox land of standardized testing is bad. Which generally I agree on, but like I'm biased because I've been through education. So like, whatever. It's a good thought experiment. The point there being, though, is that you'll learn better by teaching people, and you'll learn better by interacting with people whilst you are teaching, and also by just doing. And making tutorials is a fantastic example of that. So try that. Just Googled what NGU's Sudbury School. And yes, there is a wiki. Learning and teaching people also comes up with like new scenarios, new things that you might not have, you know, wanted to know how to do. So with my work with Hamish from the University of Sydney, and now whatever university they're working with, there's just like crazy stuff that comes up that just doesn't make any sense. But you're like, cool. Like, the time he came to me and he's like, hey, I need to calculate the angular velocity of your eyeball. I'm just like, okay, sure. We can do that. We can calculate the angular velocity of an eyeball. And so we used the eye tracking data to figure that out. It's useful. I can't remember exactly how. That's one of the problems. You're like, okay, I'll do this crazy thing, but like, why are we doing it? And you kind of forget sometimes. It is something to do with the stuff their PhD was on, which is a test that involves eye movement to head movement synchronization, which can diagnose vestibular issues. When vestibular issues is the sort of organ and system that's in the middle ear that drives your balance. And when it's broken, you can do what's called a HIT test, which sort of figures out if there is a problem there. You do that by measuring the eye movement in relation to a head movement after you rapidly jerk their head towards one direction, almost like you're kind of breaking their neck in a sort of cinematographic way, like you might see in a movie, but not actually breaking their neck, of course, because that would never go through like ethics. So doing that in game was what we were trying by measuring the velocity of the eyeball. Moving on to the next question here. Lazy Hat Guy says, any ETAs on the next major update to NEOS? No, I don't have any ETAs. We don't usually provide them. I would love to provide them in the future. We just can't provide them right now. Check the roadmap. Check our Discord announcements channel. And check our Steam update feed, I guess, and it'll come eventually. There is one Sudbury school in the entirety of the UK. Okay, well, I had zero chance of going to that then. Where is it? Oh, it's in Margate. I know Margate. Margate's a coastal town. We'd usually go there to go to the beach. That's a good question from Crusher here. So Crusher says, how would you go about starting large projects, NEOS or elsewhere? I am traditionally, now I'm in, I don't really want to be, but hey, like, careers are fun. I am actually a product manager right now. And so I am very educated in this area, but there are like parallels where you can sort of skim off the top is what I'm saying. If you go deep into project management, you're wasting your time. Planning and communication is so important. I would love if we just had in the Education Science channel, we just had a sort of a recording from a couple of people from the MC 2022 where they talked about sort of how they built things. I would love to get that from a particular group. I'd like to see it from the Critter Canyon group, and in particular from their last year's entry. The same group did the Abandonware last year. And I know at Abandonware that we had, I've just forgotten their name for no reason, Comdog. Comdog was just like running around managing the project and making sure everyone did stuff. And that's because they knew what they wanted to do and they did it. I've seen a lot of people that just like, you know, you go into NEOS and you're like, cool, I can throw this around, I can throw it everywhere, I can do whatever I want, but then they never finish it because they don't really have a plan. They don't know what they're doing. I also get sort of comments about sort of, oh, I don't use dynamic variables, I don't use dynamic impulses because I can never remember what I've called them. And the answer there is like, well, plan and document your project then. If you are making a shooter in NEOS and you're using dynamic variables for that shooter, write a text document in Notepad which lists the dynamic variable player health or player ammo or whatever you want to use. Save it in as a .txt, bring it into the world, save it to the world till it's complete, and then everyone in that world can just float over to that text pad, that text document, and be like, oh yeah, it's player health, I can use that, great. But if you don't do that, then it's going to lead to problems, particularly if you have multiple people working on the project. You need to know what you need to do. Like, I don't want you to stop and do the whole sort of like, let's plan for 3 months and then not do anything. But just like stopping and realizing that you need to converse or talk about things will get you a long way there. I highly do not recommend Scrum, but like there's about 15,000 methodologies. Scrum I've never seen done correctly, even though I am a certified Scrum master, but I don't put that on my resume anywhere. It's just a word. I'd like to show you an amazing document from the Department of Defense. This is the United States Department of Defense, and it's called Spotting Agile Bullshit, or something along those lines. It's a really scary link because it's like literally the Department of Defense, but I promise you it's fine. It's just a PDF. Detecting Agile BS. It's great. And they talk about how like it's a buzzword. They talk about everything. And then they go all the way down to the bottom. And there's like a great graphic on page 5. Page 5 is like more suited to larger, more long-term projects rather than, you know, say, for example, a month-long project for the MMC or, you know, a smaller NEOS project. The graphical version on page 5 would be great for looking and modeling, for example, NEOS itself or modeling any other VR platform itself. It's like one of the things on the graphical things is... our team's delivering working software to real users every iteration and gathering feedback? Yes, then it's actually agile. Otherwise, no, it's not. And we were doing that. I mean, I'm just sort of skip over what's going on right now in the announcements channel, etc. We were doing that, right? We were like, updates came in. We might not necessarily be able to work on exactly what you guys wanted us to work on, but like it was someone would be like, I'm having trouble doing this. And freaks would go, here's a new logics node. And you get it. So cool. So just think of that and think of stuff like that. Back at university, we had to do a final project, which was worth like, I don't know, like 60% of my degree. And I nailed it. I was amazing at it. And the project methodology I used for there was fake it till you make it. But I had to do like 14 pages of a paper, et cetera, on evaluating the different methodologies, and Scrum like hit the bottom of the list for some reason. So moving on, because we're running low on time. Mr. NG asked if we had any exciting things. So this is for use in jaw reconstructive surgery, where if we are reconstructing someone's jaw, we can actually use the leg bone. I don't know why it's decided that we use there's many bones between the leg and the jaw, but apparently the leg bone is the most suitable bone. And what the doctors want to say is what like section of bone can they cut, and then what would that do to the jaw? So there's a little rig where we're slicing the leg bone twice. We're using a larger model for slicing it, and that would then be placed near the jaw. But then we're also reflecting that slicing on the actual leg bone so they can check that they haven't taken too much leg bone, because the user ideally still needs to be able to walk, although usually they are in crutches or have reduced mobility, but they have a jaw again. That's kind of more important sometimes. So let's hop through the rest of the questions. Trace asks, when creating a world in Neo, say a project that is going to be a game world that is publicly playable, how far can you go into the terms of using ripped assets or sound from other games or movies before it dips into the toes of Legal Valley? Please read our terms of use and our guidelines before you do that. There is the concept of fair use, but fair use is often misunderstood. For an appropriate terminology or look at that, you would need to contact a lawyer. I would advise just not using ripped assets at all, because then you don't need to contact a lawyer, and lawyers are expensive. If you'd like to use ripped assets, you are stealing stuff, unless you can justify it under free use, fair use. So check our guidelines, check the terms of service, read up on fair use, contact a lawyer. If they say you can use it, you can use it. And if they say you can't, you can't. Or just avoid all that complexity and just don't use ripped assets. It's very simple. So NG is asking what methods I send that work with a similar philosophy. To be honest, I've never seen any development methodology. It's Scrum, FDD, which is feature-driven development, traditional Agile, traditional Waterfall, all the others that have various names I've forgotten now. I've never seen any of them work. And the reason is that like you need to build your own, and you need to build your own from the community of people. I say community because like when you'll get a large enough team, it's less a team, it's more like a community of people and seeing what they want to do. A good example there is things like story points, where I have frequent arguments at work about if story points are days, and the answer is no, story points are not days. Story points are a measure of difficulty, and then you can track story points based on how many you can complete during an iteration. I need to define some terms here. We're running over, but I'm going to do it because it's an interesting conversation. If you are planning the next 2 weeks of a team, software development team, you would call that an iteration, sometimes a sprint, doesn't really matter. I never call them sprints because sprints implies moving fast, and that's bad. Moving fast is good, but like moving fast sprinting means like overexertion. That's why I don't use it. And so what you're trying to do is plan how much work can we do over the next iteration? How much work can we do over the next 2 weeks? And it used to be historically that that would be defined way ahead of time in project planning, which occurred before anyone picked up their pencils and started making stuff. But now it's planned sort of as you go. And you might say, hey, I think we can do two of these really big things for the next iteration. But then you kind of get fuzzy on that. It's like, well, how big are they? How much are they going to take? And so you try and estimate how long they're going to take. And then there are schools of thought about estimating in days. You're like, oh, well, this would take 5 days and this would take 5 days. And you're like, boom, that's an entire iteration of work. 2 weeks was 14 days, 4 days for sort of wiggle room. Cool. You've managed to schedule two features. But days are not useful if you use them as story points. A story in agile development is kind of like a unit of work which benefits the user. It's hard to explain. So instead, story points should be the difficulty, because the difficulty means that you have more of a range to play with. With a two-week iteration, you have 14 days, whereas with story points, you can go anywhere from 0 to 99, and then you know what's going on, and you can track it and figure out how much your team can do. So as an example here, you might say, hey, this really big feature, that is 50 story points. And hey, this other feature, that is 5 story points. Historically, how many story points have we got through in this particular iteration over the course of the last year? Historically, we've managed to do 40 story points. Well, great. You can't do that 50 story point activity, but you can do that 5 one. And it lets you plan a little bit better. But because it's a community of people working, I'm like, oh, you've given story points to my items as days again, haven't you, colleague? And they're like, yes. And I'm like, okay, sad face. And then we have to work around that. And then like the hierarchy, of course, we want to do work tracking, and doing work tracking at work, especially this company of my scale, is just crazy. People are like, oh yeah, but I need to put this under this and that under that and this under that. And I'm just, no. Okay, two more questions. Hack13 asks, I used nested sessions this past weekend. However, I struggle to see the benefits of the use. The wiki page for them also seems to not exist. Can you provide context on the use case? Yes, hotel rooms. So they're used a lot, and they're actually created for VBLFC. And the reason behind that is, let's say you have a lobby of a hotel or the lobby of a convention. That's where people sign up, they get their badge, and then they disappear. The disappearing act, we wanted that to be other worlds. So if you went to the pool, you'd go to the pool world. I remember the VBLFC pool world well. Or if you want to disappear to the hotel rooms, you'd go to the hotel rooms world. But what that does, it starts to show a unrealistic expectation of the number of people who are at the convention, because they're all in different worlds and they're all spread out. If you use the nested session feature, you can group all of those sessions together into like a whole hotel. And so it doesn't matter what part of the hotel they're in, they're counted together. And anyone new who wants to join can go either straight to the session that people are in via the friends list, or to the entrance of the hotel where they can then find signposts to other sessions that are within there. There's a bit of a like problem in the naming of that feature, because nested sessions also comes up in code when it comes up to the, if you remember the ball menu that's on your right hand, where you can sort of see which world, and then when you close out worlds, you'll close out worlds in a certain order. That's also called nesting. And so I want to kind of like drop the terminology there between the two features, try and make those a bit clearer, and then document them. Honestly, if you're not doing a sort of convention or a hotel style event, or like a big collection of people style event, you don't need to use it. And even sometimes when you are doing a big event, you don't really need to use it. There's a good example there for the MMC award party, the award ceremony. We didn't have nested sessions going there because it was different watch parties. It was, oh, here's the Critter Canyon watch party. Here's the, I don't remember because it was a while ago, but you know, here's the other social world that's doing a watch party. Here's the other social world that's doing a watch party. You didn't need that to be nested because it was distinct activities, but the conventions needed them. I believe for Fernal, I keep saying Funeral Equinox. I had that whole problem throughout the event. Psycho asked about the ball menu, if it's legacy. It is legacy, but the systems at play weren't and are not and will not be removed. You'll notice that even if you use my worlds are in facet, if you close out worlds, you'll still end up closing out them in a like structured way. And that still matches what the balls would render if you had the balls on. But yeah, the balls are legacy. You can quote me on that one. Damn it. The balls are legacy. So Dre says, now I'm curious what's more expensive, to hire music or sound designer or pay a lawyer. Honestly, music or sound designer. You don't need an industry like giant. You don't need like a AAA music or sound designer. You need someone from the community. Depending on the project, that might even go for free. There is the jobs and freelancers section, and there is a bunch of community people out there that would love to be part of your project. You can also use permissively licensed sound. I know I use Kevin McClude's collection a lot in MMC. Some corrections from Colza and Russia that says that the new user events only were the ones that used them, or the nested sessions. Great. I was aware they were being used, but not exactly how they were being used. And then Russia says that the funeral event, see, the funeral event used them for the new player nights. They worked quite well. And then Hack posted a picture which shows how they were using them. Yes, that is a suitable setup for how you would use them. With that, I believe we are out of time. We're way out of time. I like remembering it as that, especially when I was in the hotel room world with the car. Someone spawned the very complex MMC car in one of the hotel rooms, and it freaked out because, of course, it was a very narrow space. And so it would periodically just sort of teleport into the hotel room, sweep people into it because it sort of had like an auto anchor system on it, and then glitch out of the map and fall down again. And so if you weren't careful, you would just like be attacked by a car periodically as it like grabbed you, forcibly put you in its seats, and then teleported out of existence. It was basically an SCP waiting to happen. I will see you guys later. We are out of time. I'm gonna go ahead and call it here. If you have questions, please DM me or drop them here. I might respond in text form. And I'll speak to you later. Bye-bye.